Time to join Joan Lewis, EWTN's Bureau Chief here in Rome. She brings us the Vatican Week in review.
Joan, when I left you last week, you were talking about a learning curve for everybody in
exactly.
the Vatican.
Exactly. It's been an amazing week, and we're still on that curve.
Because of the resignation.
Of the Pope is what we're talking about, because not having the last Pope to freely resign was actually Celestine V in 1294. Gregory XII resigned, but he was forced to resign. That was like 600 years ago. So the last free resignation, as Benedict XVI has given his, was 719 years ago. So a long, long time. The Vatican is studying documents. They're studying John Paul's 1996 Apostolic Constitution, Universi Dominici Gregis. And it's very, very interesting because there's going to be a press briefing on that document at the Holy See Press Office. I've reread it twice since Benedict announced his resignation on February 11th. There actually is one place, two consecutive paragraphs, where the Pope says that these dispositions that I have written down, will write down in this document, are not to be changed, altered, et cetera, et cetera. Then in the very next paragraph, he says something to the effect that, if, however, doubts arise in the hearts and minds of the cardinals as they go into conclave, does seem to open a door a bit, just a crack, to a possible change. Now, I am not a canon lawyer, so I will not write in stone what I'm saying. But my question about those two paragraphs, one seemingly written in stone, the other opening a door a bit, that will undoubtedly come up at the press conference. So next week we'll probably know all of this better. And the reason this document is so important is because it does set the election time. Paragraph 77, the Pope says all of the preceding things that he wrote are valid even if the Pope resigns. The document is basically predicated on the death of a Pope. So, a death of a pope, you have a funeral, which must be held between the fourth and sixth day after he has died. You've got novendiales. You have novendiales. You have 9 days of mourning masses presided over by very specific people in the Roman Curia. Well, we don't have that now. And so that's why the cardinals are looking at, to first of all, see if they have the right to make a change in this document. It's a papal document. Can only the Pope make a change? Theory now is that there will indeed be a motu proprio. Will it come within hours of this show, within days of this show? We simply don't know that. The premises are there for possibly beginning a conclave before that 15 to 20 day period after a sede vacante. And again, like you said at the very beginning, this is all part of the learning curve.
And it's reflected by the fact that the director of the Holy See Press Office has briefings every day.
Yes.
And they last a long time, and journalists ask all kinds of questions, no?
Well, it's very, very interesting because a lot of the questions, yes, they're technical. And as part of the learning curve, I haven't heard this asked for a day or two, but what will the Pope wear? But he won't be Pope anymore. We do have to stress that because I have heard journalists on television, the people who are not in Rome covering this, but somebody in studio in Lord knows what country, and they're asking their guests in Rome, well, now what does the church do when there are two popes? Folks, there are not going to be two popes. You will have a former retired pope, whatever title he's going to have, that will be Benedict XVI. You'll have one reigning pope that will be chosen in the March conclave.
Difficult concept for people to...
Well, sure, for all of us, too. Yeah. You know, the fact that we're going to sit in this very studio next week and we're not going to have a pope. It's just something a little difficult to wrap our minds and perhaps even our hearts around when you think of it. And we don't see him every day, but, you know, a Sunday will come and there will be no Angelus. A typical Wednesday audience will come. There will be no audience because there will be no Pope to preside at it.
Because, of course, the Pope at 5 o'clock on
the 28th
will leave Rome by helicopter for what's his normally called his summer residence in Castel Gandolfo.
Exactly. And, you know, with Benedict, it's a residence that he loves. All the popes do very, very much. It's much more family-like.
He's used it more than most popes, I think.
Yes, because in the summer, especially the last, two or three summers now, he would go, instead of going to northern Italy, do some place in the mountains and so forth, he would go straight to Castel Gandolfo and spend, you know, his 3 months there. Last summer, 3 months, except for his 3 days on his Middle East trip to Lebanon. But what's wonderful is the TV coverage of this will start at about 4:45, the afternoon of the 28th, and the Pope will say goodbye in the courtyard of San Damaso. And then he will be brought by car to the heliport in Vatican City, where he will again be greeted. This will all be on television. He will arrive. It's not a long trip at all by plane. He will arrive in Castel Gandolfo.
By helicopter.
By helicopter, yes, sorry. And the director of the papal villas at Castel Gandolfo has this week been a very generous and very intelligent, knowledgeable host in receiving the international media, cameraman, journal, whatever your job is if you're in the media. And the tour lasted about 3.5-4 hours. So you get to see a few rooms in the Apostolic Palace. Then you walk through these immensely beautiful gardens, which are never open to the public. But he said that what they're expecting, the Pope will go out on the balcony. The Apostolic Palace has a balcony with a hallway with two balconies off of it. One leads into the smaller inner courtyard. The other balcony leads out onto the main square of this very small, charming town called Castel Gandolfo. And Saverio Petrillo, the villa director, said, and he's been around, he's amazing, he's been around since Pius the 12th, has to be the longest-serving Vatican employee. But he said they're expecting many, many thousands of people to be in the square and all the adjacent little streets and everything else. Because they talk about, the people of Castel Gandolfo talk about the Pope as their Pope. And they've always respected his privacy and been very, very helpful in trying to, you know, protect him and kind of be like gendarmes. So,
getting to the Pope himself, of course, the Pope's still in office, as we know. John, this has been a quiet week because he's been on spiritual exercises,
right,
which have been led by Cardinal Gianfranco Ravasi, who is the president of the Pontifical Council for Culture. On Sunday, he kept to his Angelus. So
he
did. We were in a packed St. Peter's Square.
Well, as a matter of fact, the first estimates, to be honest, were something like 50, 60,000, and then that was revised upwards to about at least 100,000 by police and so forth. And we were both in the square. I just walked around, talked to people, you know, asked them why they were here, how they found out about the Pope's resignation. A great number did say television, but a very large number did say it was the social media, how they found out about his resignation on the 11th. But it was in many, many ways a festification. There were huge banners from organizations, Communion and Liberation, very close to the Holy Father, and he to that organization. The wonderful banners, the parishes, families. I can't remember when I last saw so many children in the square. And one little girl, like she was about 7 years old, and she started to answer a question as her parents were answering my question. And I said, oh, honey, I'd love your input. I said, you're very young. It's very important to me what you say. She said, he's such a good man, the Pope. And I just thought that was so cute. I mean, a seven-year-old, you know, who wouldn't know doctrine or anything like that. But it was a wonderful day. Benedict is so humble, though. When he becomes the center of attention like this, as he did at the Ash Wednesday Mass, at the end of Mass, the long applause and so forth, he's almost uncomfortable. I mean, he thanked the people, because he did speak after the Angelus, which was dedicated to the gospel about the temptations of Christ, the temptation in the wilderness, which is proclaimed every year on the first Sunday of Lent.
Today we contemplate Christ in the desert, fasting, praying, and being tempted. As we begin our Lenten journey, we join him and we ask him to give us strength to fight our weaknesses. Let me also thank you for the prayers and support you have shown me in these days. May God bless all of you.
So the Pope did talk about temptations at great length, and he said that the tempter is cunning. He does not directly impel us towards evil, but rather towards a false good, making us believe the true realities are power and everything that satisfies our primary needs. In this way, God becomes secondary. He's reduced to means. In short, he becomes unreal. He no longer counts. He disappears. So ultimately, said Pope Benedict, in temptation, faith is at stake because God is at stake. So huge applause, and then he did greet the faithful in a number of different languages, as is his custom. And I found it very interesting. His comments will be brief and slightly different, usually, in the different languages. In Spanish, he did ask the people to pray for him and to pray for the next pope. So very, you know, people love to read something into a statement like that. Is he suggesting a geographic area that his successor should come from? So these are exciting times. They're historic. They're sad. Those of us who certainly work here see the Pope all the time. But there's millions of faithful all over the world who are mourning this man, you know, as he's leaving us, and in his own words, he said he's going to be nascosto, hidden away in the monastery, which we did get to see in our tour of Vatican City.
The sense of shock, isn't there?
Shock, yes, exactly. Shock. I said to one television outlet that interviewed me, I said I was stunned but not surprised. I said those of us who cover him in Rome see him very, very often. Vatican Radio, you all know you can hear in a person's voice if they're well or not, or if it's their typical, you can hear better than a lot of us who look at a person's face. So you could see a physical decline. So that's why I always said I was stunned at the announcement, but not surprised that it would happen.
Thank you very much, Joan.
Well, you're welcome. God bless.
And you were listening there to Joan Lewis, EWTN's bureau chief here in Rome.